Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you, Joe. I might add that folks can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Tachi. It's just that easy. And if you do, it has something to do with Monday Night Talk. As Joe said, hashtag Monday Night Talk. Well, joining us right now is State Senator Vinny DiMacedo. Senator, how are you?
Kevin, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Joe Rossi, of course, is here as well.
How you doing, Joe?
Good, good, Vinny.
So probably the first question out of the box, Senator, is where do you stand with your Christmas shopping right now?
Getting there. I have to say I did more online this year than I've ever done in the past. So it's more convenient. So I've just been so busy, I haven't had a chance to get out shopping.
Now, is when it comes to the shopping and when you have them, I mean, do you find yourself waiting and hoping that, now, do you have the stuff sent to your house or do you have it sent to your district offices or what?
No, just to the house.
Okay.
Just trying to find, you know, just little stuff there, you know. Sometimes it's just a little bit easier. It's something I didn't do in the past, but mm-hmm. the convenience of it and the schedule is kind of a little bit tight, so it worked for me this year.
I have to say, is with me, this year's my first year too. I mean, I'm a dinosaur here, but the thing that nerved me is like waiting. Like I got like a couple of packages that I'm waiting for now, and I'm like, oh my god, you know, you like track them, and like one should have been here 2 days ago, but it's not going to get here till tomorrow, and I'm like, oh my god, I hope when I get home it's there. I mean, do you have any of that?
For the most part, I think you know, whatever I did earlier, so. I haven't had that stress yet. I would imagine by next week, if I had stuff out there, I'd be a little nervous. But at this point, we're okay.
Okay. I know that you recently just got back from a trip, and you took a trip to where?
Myself and some colleagues from the Senate and two members of the House and the mayor of Brockton went to the island of Cape Verde. As I think you know, I was born in the island of Cape Verde 49 years ago, and it was a great opportunity to go back. I don't know if you heard, but almost a year ago, there was a large volcano that erupted in the island of Fogo. And, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of Cape Verdeans in this area, specifically the Brockton area, that come from the island of Fogo. And so... a significant eruption and, you know, destroyed a ton of homes. I got some great pictures that, you know, so people can actually see what actually happened as far as the, you know, the destruction. And fortunately, no one was hurt because, you know, it's a very slow-moving eruption and the lava just kind of slowly moves in, but it does literally take over, you know, just large swaths of land with, you know, filling in with lava.
I would think that also meant that it damaged homes and businesses that were in the vicinity.
Totally wiped out. I mean, just communities totally, you know, dislocated and had to move to different regions. And you know, it was pretty significant volcano. So we went there to assess. It was myself, Senator Montigny, Senator Pacheco, Senator Rodriguez. Representative Cabral and Representative Carvalho, who is also born in the Cape Verde Isles.
What was the one memorable moment of your trip that you could share with us?
There's a gentleman by the name of Frank Baptista, who is a called Voice of the Immigrant. He has a radio show in the southern Massachusetts area, more towards Fall River, New Bedford. Mm-hmm. And he joined us as well, as far as the media went. And he, too, was born in Brava, Cape Verde, left when he was 14 years old, and he went back for the first time in 48 years. And so I was able to see him go back to the home that he was born in and, you know, go inside and see it. And it was actually a very moving experience to watch someone, you know, who have left their home 48 years ago, never to go back to the island and go back for the first time.
Now, I guess I can ask, is any business done, any as far as trying to broker anything, as far as agreements, as far as, you know, how Cape Verde and any of the communities here on the South Shore can kind of interact when it comes to business?
There clearly is some business ventures that have happened there through, you know, the people who are, you know, who lived in Cape Verde and now live who now live here, you know, do business, and you know, it is a good place to do business. It's a very safe, you know, it's a very safe, stable country, and so that there's a way, you know, there's your money is relatively safe. The temperature is, you know, between 70 and 80 degrees year round. It's near the equator. So it's very interesting in there, but nonetheless, it still is a, you know, third world country, and it doesn't necessarily have, you know, it, just by its the very nature of being an island, it's, you know, it's very isolated in many ways. And so there are nine different islands that are habitable, and one is not, inhabited. And so, you know, it has opportunities, but we didn't go specifically for business. We want to continue to build relationships with the Cape Verdean government. Myself, Senator Pacheco, and Senator Cabral addressed their parliament, and we spoke before their parliament, talking about American government. They're only a 40-year-old country. And so, you just try to share with them some of the successes that we have, as a nation have had in our democratic government and what that means to us. So it's a great opportunity to continue to build relationships, and they are very, very pro-American.
Senator, let's talk a little bit about stuff that's happening here. Come January, we're going to see we'll see a seat in the Senate that will be vacated by one of your colleagues, Weymouth Mayor-elect Bob Hedley. Give me your thought as far as the dwindling numbers of Republicans in the state Senate.
Well, bittersweet. You know, I'm very happy for him. He did incredibly well in Weymouth. I think. An absolute landslide there. He clearly has done his job as a state senator for many years in that area. Weymouth very much appreciated him as their advocate, and now they're going to have him as a mayor. For me, disappointed. I hate to see him go. I enjoyed working with him. I was in the House, so I got to know him, but I got to know him pretty well, despite that, you know, being in the Republican circles, and admire Bob quite a bit. He's a lot of fun. He's a hard worker, and nobody knows more about transportation than Bob Hedlund. And so, as far as the caucus goes, it's going to be a legitimate loss to us. And it's the nature of this business, though. People move on, you know, onward and upward. And you know, he got a great opportunity, and he seized it. And so, I wish him well.
How important is our numbers when it comes to the party? It's funny you mentioned the caucus, and many a time I can remember Senator Hedlund talking about when the Republicans, the small numbers that the Republicans have, you guys could caucus basically in a phone booth or in a booth in a restaurant, and it seems as though that's still the case where you have, what does the Republican Party have to do in order to be able to, you know, try to gain a foothold in the Senate and get, you know, get at least equal representation in the Senate?
Well, it's obviously challenging in the sense that you have 46 of them were Republicans. You know, this seat's still an open seat, so we're going to see how that turns out. Nonetheless, I will say this new year with the new governor has really strengthened our position is in the minority, because in many ways, we work closely with the administration to try to assist them in regards to legislation. And I'll just give you a quick example of the MBTA legislation. As you know, Governor Baker was very interested in reforming the MBTA, taking on responsibility, but he needed the Financial Control Board. There was a lot of pushback. It didn't happen in the House. In the Senate, it wasn't on the radar, and it was, you know, the small six of us Republicans in the House that filed that legislation, and then we went to town, and we worked with our colleagues. We tried to make the case, and you know, and fortunately, the public helped us as well. And despite the fact that our numbers weren't there, we ultimately ended up giving the governor a piece of legislation that he wanted and that was important to him, and that would not have happened if it were not for the, you know, the small band of Republican senators in the Senate.
Senator Joe Rossi here. I realize that you are a Republican in the Senate, but how has, you know, the governor been in terms of working kind of hand in hand with both sides throughout the entire legislature in terms of trying to get stuff done and really communicating his ideas that may or may not be popular on both sides of the aisle?
Let me just say, this is going into my 17th, almost 18th year in the legislature. No one's done it better. He's colorblind. He is political. You know, he's partisan blind. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat. He's working with both sides of the aisle. He's treating everyone with the same level of respect. As there was an article today in the Boston, clearly has decided that his goal is, to be Mr. Fix-It. And he has gone out there, and if a problem comes up, okay, let's figure it out. Let's bring the best people to the table. Doesn't matter their party. And it has really worked well. And I think it's clear. I mean, he has a 74% approval rating. It's the highest approval rating for a governor in the country. And it's because he's treated everyone with respect. And for those of us in the minority party, strengthened us and given us an opportunity to be a larger part of the political process. But to me, I'm not even looking at the disparity in the numbers because having and being able to work with Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito has been an absolute joy.
When does the honeymoon period end, though? This first year, first year as governor. Lieutenant Governor, as you're talking about, Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito, when do you see the honeymoon officially ending? Or do you feel that this governor has shown himself to be able to work with everybody and he's been accepted across the board, that it's just going to be for the foreseeable future?
General consensus would be is usually you get a 6-month honeymoon period when you're coming in, a lot of new stuff. Mm. He's well in and beyond. But I don't see it happening unless he changes or moves his tack. As he continues to work with people and try to find consensus on, a whole host of different issues, that he's trying to find the things that we as a legislature can work on together to get things done. That's good for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It's good for the Republican Party. It's good for the Democratic Party. And I have to tell you, I've just got an incredible amount of respect for him. He's done his job. We all know he's incredibly intelligent. He's sincere. He's honest, and he's hardworking. And so, I think that's why it will continue to be successful. I mean, things may change, and people may push back, but it's not what conventional wisdom would say. It's because of the simple fact that he's not your average, he's not your average guy. He is definitely an honest, clear, hardworking guy who cares about doing the right thing, and it doesn't matter who gets credit. It doesn't matter, a Republican idea or a Democratic idea. Has he blamed his predecessor at all? He hasn't spent any time saying, this is his fault. This is his fault. Here's a problem. We got to fix it. My watch. And that's what he does. So, kudos to him.
I guess I would ask you. We're sitting here. We're talking about the governor. And again, we are speaking with State Senator Vinny DiMaceto. If there were a couple of hot button issues that folks could have gotten their noses bent out of shape about. The governor commenting, that we saw recently about the Syrian refugee immigration and the governor saying, we don't want any of the immigrants here in this state. We saw him butt heads a few times already with the GOP front runner for president, Donald Trump. Your thoughts on him handling issues like that?
Well, I think people know who he is. And so, the concern that he had in regard to the Syrian refugees. I mean, let's face it, we saw what happened in Paris. We know for a fact that, some of those people came through as Syrian refugees. And so, he he simply said that, you know, listen, my concern is the, you know, the safety of my of the residents of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So I want to make sure we know what we're dealing with. And that's what he said. And you can play politics with it all day long. I think that's as rational a comment that any person could make. In regards to Donald Trump, Charlie Baker has clearly decided that, you know, he's going to be a unifier and not a divider. And, you know, when you as the presidential candidate, clearly there's a different approach that, you know, Donald Trump is taking. And, you know, to me, politics is about addition and not subtraction. I mean, you need to build and you need to get to 50+1 and you need to, you know, find, because you represent everybody. And when you make comments that divide people more and more, it's dangerous. And so, I think that's what he was trying to say with Donald Trump. And this is not, when you alienate an entire people group, that just, is not wisdom. And I think that's what he was trying to say. And I absolutely understand what he's saying.
I guess I want to get your take on what's going on as far as who could possibly be our next president. Are you watching what's happening, whether it's Hillary and Bernie or the number of candidates who are trying to get the Republican nod? What's your thought on the whole process so far?
Well, I think what you're seeing here is an absolute frustration with gridlock, with people not working together, and the fact that, you know, we have a very partisan, scenario happening right now in Washington, D.C., whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, there isn't a lot of trust. And that's why Bernie Sanders, who for many people felt was a fringe individual, social, self-proclaimed socialist, doing incredibly well. He's clearly not the establishment in the Democratic Party, but doing amazingly well. Then you have Donald Trump, who hasn't really been involved in the Republican politics, and now here he is, leading the polls. People are angry and frustrated with what's happening in Washington, and I think they're taking it out through the electoral process right now. And that's what, I think that's the overarching issue. What's happening in the Republican Party, people seem to be very angry with what's happening in regards to immigration, a lot of these hot-button issues. And, apparently Donald Trump is saying things that, are getting some of the base excited, and clearly on the other side, Bernie Sanders is, talking in regards to a very socialist philosophy, a bigger government, and contrary to probably where the middle of the road is, and yet the hardcore base gets excited about that. So you're seeing the extremes taking over right now as far as the conversation.
What do you see if you could play political Nostradamus? How do you see it all shaking out as far as the Democratic and Republican nomination? What is the heavyweight battle that we're going to see going into next November, if you could call it?
Well, I think first and foremost, Hillary is clearly going to win. She's the Democratic primary has not been nearly as contested. It is not contentious. It's it's clearly an idea based situation. On the Republican side, it's clearly more controversial and more contested. You had 16 candidates. I think we're down for the most part down to 9. We'll see tomorrow in the debate. Mm-hmm. What I do think is you're going to see happen is Donald Trump is hanging in about that 30 some odd percent, and at some point, some of the 9 will disappear, and they will have a place to go. I mean, right now you're seeing Cruz doing very well in Iowa, which is a very evangelical area, and he's doing well. Huckabee did well there, and Santorum did very well there in the past, but it didn't catapult them ultimately to the nomination. And what happens in New Hampshire is going to tell a lot. And I think once New Hampshire happens in Super Tuesday, you'll see, everyone else fall in. Donald Trump will clearly be there. But who is, and I hate to use this word, but who does the mainstream Republicans rally around? Is it, you know, Marco Rubio? Is it Ted Cruz? Is it, you know, Chris Christie? And that's the, you know, that's the question. I personally am somewhat biased, and, you know, I'll be honest, I have been supporting, I'm actually the co-chair of Rubio for Massachusetts, Rubio for president of Massachusetts. I think that he articulates, you know, a vision for America that is, I think, for many of us, it's fighting for the American dream, making sure that American dream that we've all been able to participate in is there for our children, and it's about building and bringing people together. You know, we spent 8 years of divisiveness. I do not believe it is not good, nor will it be successful in trying to divide people to win a victory. We need to really bring people together, and we need to build a coalition of people to be successful in 2016.
Last question I will ask you before I let you go, and again, we've been speaking with State Senator Vinny DiMaceto. Any goals for the second half of your legislative session in the Senate?
Well, there's a lot going on right now. There's a big ballot initiative coming up in regards to the legalization of marijuana, the full legalization of marijuana. I was appointed to a commission by Senate President Stanley Rosenberg to try to get a sense of what would happen if that happens. What does that mean for Massachusetts? And again, this is a ballot initiative. It's going to be voted on by the people, not the legislature, so we're not voting on it. But if it were to be implemented, what would happen to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? How could we react? And, you know, and then on the other side of the coin is, should it happen? And, you know, what would it be if, you know, if we did this, what could happen to Massachusetts? And so there's nine of us that we're probably going to be going in January or February to Colorado, where it's actually been legalized, to get a sense of what's happened in Colorado, what are the implications, talk to the district attorneys, talk to police, talk to the schools, and get an understanding of how it is impacted, you know, Colorado. So that's going to be a very busy topic for myself. And, of course, as I've shared with you in the past, I'm also still the ranking member on the Committee on Ways and Means. And we're going to have another tough budget. You know, things are moving, and we're growing still. But the reality at the end of the day is that healthcare costs continue to grow. The health connector is continuing to cost more and more. So you know, those healthcare costs have a huge impact on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that has basically a universal healthcare system.
Senator, we want to thank you very much for joining us, and we want to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas and the happiest of New Year's.
Merry Christmas to you, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And we'll look forward to having you back on during sometime in the new year.
Thank you so much.
There he is. Vinny DiMaceto joining us. We will just kind of step aside for half a second. But when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.